Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, just to say, our next discussion may not be suitable for younger listeners. The Irish Medical Organisation is warning today that the introduction of regulations to safeguard children from increasingly extreme pornography is of critical societal importance. They say children as young as 10 are being exposed to violent and upsetting content on a regular basis. Meanwhile, the UK government has announced a major push to enforce stricter child safety rules online, placing platforms like X under pressure to prove users' ages. Well, in a moment, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Madeleine Egali, who's a member of the GB committee of the IMO. But first, we're joined by Dr. Rachel O'Connell, who's a leading voice in online child safety and a founder of Trust Elevate, a provider of child age verification and parental consent software. And Rachel, good afternoon. You're very welcome to the programme. We might start with that push in the UK to enforce stricter child safety rules online. How far-reaching do you see that push, or what will it actually do you think, in practice to actually protect children online?
Well, actually, it's part of a global shift towards protecting children online. And the UK Online Safety Act reflects Ireland's Online Safety Act and the EU's Digital Services Act and the General Data Protection Regulation, which all underscore this kind of global trend. And the central tenet is the recognition that children, due to their age and developmental stage, require special protections, and that includes limiting exposure to adult content. And these laws are requiring companies to reliably know the ages of their users so that they can create safer spaces for them, and for very young users to verify when somebody says they're the parent of the child, so the parent can be involved in making sure that the platform respects the child's right to a safer internet.
Okay. Well, we're going to hear why this is so important just right now. So, Rachel, you might hold on the line for us if you don't mind. I'm going to go to Dr. Madeleine Egali, as I said, a member of the GP committee of the IMO. And Madeleine, the IMO warning today of the malign force of pornography. Can you tell me a little bit about what your members are reporting?
So, more and more we're becoming aware in the medical profession about the effect of violent pornography exposure to young children and to how this violent pornography, which, by the way, modern pornography is 94% of it has been shown to be violent, and how this is impacting on the attitudes and behaviours of young people. And they are learning about sex through pornography, and this has been shown very clearly in studies in the UK, the USA and Australia. There's some data coming out as well through the through SERP, which is the Sexual Exploitation Research Project run by Ruth Breslin. So I'm seeing in my practice young children coming in frightened, anxious, distressed with their mother or their father, looking for guidance with regard to what to do as a result of them clicking on a link that inadvertently and coming across the most depraved content. And we know that most...
So sorry, that's really interesting. I might just stop you there for a second. Mm-hmm. So children are being brought in by their parents, and what is the medical complaint as such? Is it anxiety, distress? What are the parents looking for help with?
Well, exactly that. So it's, you know, as GPs, we are often the first port of call for all manner of distress that befalls a family, and the children that will come into us who luckily have confided in their parents, because some of them don't and they're suffering alone, and I'll come on to that in a second. But the children that confide in their parents, the poor parents, are shocked and upset and feel terribly guilty that this has happened as well, because, you know, the parental guilt is huge, as we all know. And they come in looking for advice, how to talk to their children about pornography, how to talk to them about what they've seen. The children often don't even know what they've seen. They don't know that it's a sex act. They just see some very violent display in front of them. And so, you know, we have to talk them through that and then signpost them to some support agencies, depending on what the presentation is.
And do we have any idea what sort of impact viewing that sort of material has on them and their little brains?
Well, there is, of course, there are neurophysiologists and behavioural scientists researching all of this, but we do know that children, say particularly as they go into their early teens, if they come across it, and the young boys can be hooked in, because it can be a euphoric thing. It can be something that they think, oh God, that's interesting, and then they're pulled in with something maybe minor, but the algorithms then pull them into more and more violent situations. And then unfortunately the boys think that this is something that they should be asking girls for. They think this is normal sex, by the way. This is not, you know, nobody's told them that this isn't normal. And the girls then think that this is what they should be offering. And there's some really good studies in the UK, a survey of 130 young students between the ages of 16 and 18 showed that coercion and persuasion of the girl was acceptable, and disregard for the girl's comfort with more violent acts was becoming acceptable, and the girls were accepting of it
because again, girls are often, this is what they're seeing,
portrayed as being submissive and to do what the man wants.
And I understand you're also seeing female patients, I assume older than 10, but who are reporting injuries as a result of this sort of rough sex then?
Yes, and without going into a lot of detail at this time of the day, the sad part of it is that I'm in practice 25 years, I've had women report sexual violence and rape. Of course, they know they haven't consented. What's really concerning is when a woman comes in with an injury, what she thought was consensual sex, she thought this is what she should be offering and should be putting up with, and not considering her own mutual interest in the relationship. And she's coming with one particular girl had bruising, and she didn't realise that, you know, a normal sexual encounter doesn't require a person to be harmed or injured or to be in pain.
And what sort of age group are we talking about with that, Madeline?
So that'll be that would be in the early 20s, that kind of
okay.
age group.
So it's sort of the generation that may have been growing up with access to pornography online then.
Yeah, there's some really, so if you look at, say, 25 years ago, it would be a magazine that's passed around, with, you know, schoolboys. Now it has very, very rapidly changed into violent acts. And there's very good work done by a woman called Dr. Debbie Harbenek in Indiana. And she surveyed 5,000 students, undergraduates in her university, and 2/3 of the women had been subjected to strangulation during intercourse. The interesting thing and the worrying thing is that most of those women did not realise that this is an inherently harmful practice and extremely dangerous.
And I know that you're saying the scale and the pace of change in pornographic material compared to just a few short years ago has been overwhelming and disturbing, that it's just what is available to people now is much more violent, much more graphic.
There was a recent report by Ruth Breslin and her team in the Sexual Exploitation Research Project that was commissioned by Women's Aid, and the research is called Facing Reality. The fact of it, and the facts are absolutely clear, 94% of pornography is now exceptionally violent and is predicated on violence on the female content provider. And that female is subjected to degradation and humiliation. So obviously our young men are getting this sex script that this is what is normal, this is what women want, this is normal sex. And you know, there's an attitude there, well, you know, it's very prudish, like, you know, why don't we just embrace pornography? I think we're being prudish by not discussing it and not coming up front.
Well, it's really, really interesting and really disturbing to hear what you're saying. I know the IMO is calling for the introduction of regulation to safeguard children from this sort of content. And we were speaking to Rachel shortly. I'll come to Rachel again on that. But specifically, what kind of regulation does the IMO want to see?
Well, we would like to see that there is an age, at the very least, age verification, much as they do for, you know, if you have to open a Revolut account, you have to have an age verification. Why not for pornography? Porn companies don't want this. Remember, they're a multi-billion dollar industry, international industry. So no, they don't want this. They don't want anybody to be restricted because they want to get the children young and hook them in and have them as customers for life. So we need to age restrict with outside verification. ARCOM, the digital regulator in France, has successfully done this. So they have national identification cards, etc. But ARCOM have had good results, and they're mandated to that they've mandated the companies to age verify, and if they don't, they're blocked.
Okay, if you don't mind staying with us, Madeleine, for just a second, and I'm going to bring in Dr. Rachel O'Connell again to talk to us about how possible this is. And Rachel, I know there has been a lot of talk about age verification for social media as well as this sort of extreme content. Is it possible, do you think, realistically, or what would it take to sort of implement something along those lines?
It's absolutely possible. I'm the technical author of the PAS 1 to 96 Age Checking Code of Practice, which was published by the British Standards Institute, and it was for the purposes of ensuring that adult content, well, all content providers could age check and do so in a privacy-preserving way. And that's now becoming an international standard. So there are identity, security, and privacy experts in 116 countries around the world that we've all convened for many, many hours and weeks over the last 3-4 years to develop this technical standard. So this is really, it is possible to age verify and to do that in a privacy preserving way.
So how would that work with, say, you are on the internet and you go to a pornography site? Do you need to put in, what do you need to put in order to access the material there?
So there are a number of different ways. Some platforms can enable a low kind of assurance way where you you get out your phone and there's a circle on the phone and you look into your camera and your age is estimated based on your facial features.
Oh, wow.
Right? So that's privacy preserving. You can also scan your driver's license or a passport and they will extract the fact that you're 18 plus from that. You can there are a number of different methods that are available on the market. You can also provide some details. For example, with Trust Elevate, you can provide details, your first name, last name, date of birth, and mobile number. That information can be hashed on your device. So the company that's running the checks never sees that data, and it's checked against authoritative data sources. And the adult site or the social media site just gets to know this person is over 18 or they're between 13 and 16 or under 12. So it is entirely possible to run those kinds of checks. Furthermore, for social media and gaming platforms where you have a young person, say 8 years old or below 13, there's a legal requirement for them to verify to get consent from the actual parent. Mm. So there's a means by which you can verify that somebody who claims to be a parent is a parent, and you can then enable those companies to respond accordingly. And if I could just speak to one of the points that Madeleine has made as well, we do need to consider as well the Internet Watch Foundation. I'm just going to be careful about my language here. There are 3 to 6 year olds who are online and 11 to 12 year old boys and girls who are on social media platforms live streaming and find themselves being groomed by adults who request them to take particular images in particular poses with particular items. And it's called self-generated child sexual abuse material, which I think is a terrible term for it. But that kind of abuse, they don't. So most of these kids are in their bedrooms upstairs at home,
right,
where this abuse is taking place. So really, when we're thinking about adult pornography, we also need to think about child sexual abuse material and the measures that we need to put in place to protect children from those sorts of exposure. And part of why... Right.
Yeah. So I just wanted to ask you, because age verification measures of some sort are due to come into force here in July.
That's right.
What is your expectation of how they will work and whether or not they'll be able to be enforced by Commissioner Mann, or does it have the resources, the powers to enforce them?
It does indeed. It's not only Commissioner Mann, but it's also the data protection regulator and the financial regulators can also enforce these laws. Under the Anti-Money Laundering Directive, there's a requirement to know your customers, so they need to know the ages of people. Madeleine mentioned Revolut. It's a really good example. So when you open a Revolut account, they have to go through a verification process. So the means by which you can check age, those technical means exist. So companies have no reason not to. They've fought against it for about 15 years, but now, right, the standards exist. The regulators have gone through the process of running technical trials and doing consultations, etc. So finally, we've had Ofcom release, a time frame. You've got between now and July to implement the solutions that are out there on the market. So this is entirely possible and feasible. And critically, it's possible to do that in a privacy-preserving way.
It is really interesting to speak to both of you, and it's certainly a topic we've covered a lot in this programme and we will be returning to and keeping a very sharp eye on. Thank you both so much for joining us. That's Dr. Rachel O'Connell, and before that, Dr. Madeleine Egali from the IMO. You can let us know what you think about all of that to 51551, and indeed, if you've been affected by anything you've heard during this conversation, go to rte.ie/helplines.